Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, the law office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is, March 4th, Thursday, 2010. This is a community conference call which is being recorded. Any answers we give here are given based upon the facts we see. Please make sure that you understand this is meant to be an information call. We may not be able to answer your questions as accurately as we can in a one-on-one consultation. And also, merely giving answers does not make us your lawyers, nor does it make you our client. Okay? So there are no obligations either side here. And most importantly, this call is being recorded. If you do not wish to be recorded, you can drop out now. If you ask a question, I would suggest you conceal your identity, make up a name if you want. Don't tell people who you are. There is no need because this is a public call. With that said, I'm going to get started on the conference call questions. Give me a second. Let me roll up to the first question. Okay. First question is from Sam Sami 1. Very simple question. Can I change my employer during green card process? My EB-2 is approved. I-140 is waiting for approval. Sir, EB-2 is not approved until I-140 is approved. So your I-140 is currently waiting approval. Can I change employers after I-140 is approved without affecting the green card process? No. If you change employers after the I-140 is approved, you have to start the labor certification all over again with the new employer. Only thing you carry forward will be your priority date. Once the I-140 is approved, unless it is revoked for fraud later on, the priority date becomes your property. You can take it with any employer for any job. Okay? So the answer is no, you cannot. Next question is VGWeb99. Continuing with my current employer after green card. So this gentleman wants to know, I've got my green card approved. How long do I have to continue working with my current employer? This question has been answered in several places, including the frequently asked questions as well as my blog. Go look it up. The answer is there is no set period. Basically, what INS looks for is your intention when you got the green card. If your intention was to stay with the current employer indefinitely, not permanently, indefinitely. There's no such thing as permanent. Indefinitely means you don't have a date certain in mind. If I take up a job intending to leave in 20 years, that's not allowed. If I take up a job intending to never leave or at least have no definite period in mind, and 10 days later I change my mind, you're probably okay. Okay? So there's all these weird criteria that INS uses, but normally speaking, after you got your green card, the longer you can stay, the better it is for you to, for citizenship purposes. If they raise any questions, you've been with the employer several months, after getting the green card, you should be okay. So there really is no particular time period I can give you. Are there any constraints that new job profile should be related with the old job? Not at all. Once you've got your green card, you've been with the employer a few months, you can do whatever you want, including starting your own business. Are there any procedures that need to be followed by leaving the current employer? Only one thing, if you change your residential address, even on a green card, you are required to file form AR-11 within 10 days of moving, I think. So make sure you just, if there is a residence address change, you do an AR-11 filing. It can be done online, okay? But other than that, there is no other formality you've got to do. Next set of questions. Also, I'm a primary applicant for my green card. Wife is a dependent. Her 485 is filed but not approved. Can you please advise the steps, procedures to be followed to get 485 approved? Nothing you can do. You can, if the priority date is current and they have gone over the processing time, you can contact the local congressman's office and they can probably fix it for you. But other than that, if the PD is not current, there isn't anything you can do about it. Next question, N. Rajesh. N. Rajesh wanted to know about eligibility for filing N-400 when on N-470. His situation, as I understood, is that he meets the criteria for filing for citizenship. He's got the N-470 approved, but he's been traveling to USA every few months, which is good. Keep doing that. Now, he wants to know, can I file for my N-400 while I'm still outside USA? And the answer is no. You've got to come back. As far as I know, you've got to come back and establish domicile in USA in order to file N-400. Okay? Next question, K. Ashish Malhotra. He wants to know, my friend entered USA on B1, B2 in the first week of January. He wants to change to F1. Well, first of all, as I recall, there is a regulation now on the books, which actually that regulation has been on the books several years, but INS has just woken up a few months ago and started taking notice of it. That regulation says if you enter USA on B1, B2, you cannot change to F1 unless you have told the people, the CBP at the port of entry that you intend to convert to F1. Okay? If he goes back to his home country to apply for an F1, they can also create problems for him. Ideally, what he should have done is, again, it's too late for that now, but ideally what he should have done is, when he entered on a B1, B2, not to do anything to get a student visa, and, you know, just do his whatever purpose he came for, and if later on he decided he wanted to study here, he should have then gone back to his home country. From there, he should have applied for admission and let them send the I-20 to India. That would have been the right thing to do, okay? Because consulates also don't like people coming to USA on a B1, B2 unless they have told them at the consulate that they intend to explore the option of studying in USA. Consulates don't like people coming on a short-term visa while their intention is to go for a long-term visa like F1. Next question, Karan, status change. If one needs to change, oh, one more thing, by the way, for Ashish Malhotra, that if somebody has come and gone on a B1, B2, their chances of getting F1 become much better. But if they have tried to get admission while they were here and tried to violate the terms of the student visa, of the tourist visa, they can have trouble getting student visa, okay? Karan says, if one needs to change his status from visitor to H1 or F1, how many days in advance does one need to apply? Well, first of all, there is, let's say I enter USA with a 6-month stay given. After 4 months or 5 months or even after 5.5 months, I apply for a change of status to H1 and F1. I've already mentioned what the problems with F1 change of status are in the previous question. But let's take the easier example. If they want to convert to H1, okay? If they convert from B1 to H1, once they have filed the application within the life of their current stay, they can continue to live and stay in USA until the H1 approval. So it's not a problem. So let's say I've got 6 months, and I apply on 175th day for H1, from B1, B2 to H1, I'm fine. I can stay here as long as my case is pending and not decided. I cannot work, but I can stay here. So there is not this is not a good question. How many days in advance does one need to apply? There really is no such rule that you have to apply a certain days, number of days in advance. Have you recently come across any status change requests from your firm being accepted? All the time. F1 to H1 is being done all the time. But my problem with visitor visa is, because visitor visas are short-term visas, even if you get INS to give you a B to H transfer, if you ever need to travel outside USA, the consulate will hate you. They could deny your H1 visa based upon the fact that you entered USA upon a pretext. You were lying when you got your tourist visa. That's what they could say. I'm not saying that they will say that in all cases, but they could say that and they could deny your visa. You are better off going back to your home country, getting your H-1 visa stamp and coming back in. Then consulate has no grounds to deny you visa based upon your preconceived intention. Okay? Next question. It's not clear from your fee structure how much fees is charged for status change candidates from B2 to F1. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's Karan's question only. What is the fees from changing from B2 to F1 or B2 to H1? See, H1 fees are the same. We already have them listed on our website. Some of these applications, like from change from B1 to F1, B2 to F1, we don't even encourage people to get lawyers unless there is some complication. B to F definitely is not even advised. I mean, you can't even do that. INS should reject that case, okay? But in many cases that we have not listed, either we don't encourage lawyers for that, or they are so such a small number of cases that we get per year, we don't feel like the need to list them. If you still need to get a lawyer for this and you feel like you want to get a lawyer for this, feel free to send us an email through the contact us form. I have never felt the need to represent people necessarily in B2F conversion. But again, I'm pointing out to you, B2F conversion is not even possible. Not unless they have declared their intention at the port. As far as I remember, that's the law. KG Dubs wants to know about the removal of conditional permanent residence. He says, my wife is going to study somewhere else. If there's a second interview for removal of the conditional permanent residency, I-751, does she have to come with me? USCIS will not interview you here and her there. There is no such provision in the law. They will ask you to bring her with you unless they decide to give you an exemption, which is unlikely. Okay. When we file for I-751, do we have to send utility bills, etc., for every month since I became permanent resident, or 2-3 bills are fine? I would say submit as many as you conveniently can. That is the easy answer, as many as you conveniently can. Last, is there any format for affidavit of bona fide marriage that I should follow? I don't know the answer to that question, sir. It all depends. Every case is different. But general format for an affidavit should be on our website. You could go into frequently asked questions. It should be there somewhere. But specifically what you should say in your affidavit, I do not know the answer to that question. Next question, Scroogey Doodle. Scroogey Doodle wants to know, H-4 with H-1 application pending, how to get I-94? Good morning, Rajiv. A company had filed for H-1 December 2009 for my wife. Wife was in India. She's now here on H-4 visa. Last week, we had an RFE. If the H-1 is approved, we either have to go for consular processing or change of status. Correct. While the employer is filing a response to RFE, is there any way we can note that my wife is in the country? Yes. What you should do is, and I'm not sure it's going to work, but we've done this in the past and sometimes it does work. What you could do is, you could submit with the response to the RFE an amended H-1 petition, which instead of requiring consular notification, requests change of status. Everything else in the case is the same. The only thing is, you are now requesting change of status. Attach a copy of your wife's current I-94, and say that she has entered USA while this case was pending, so we are requesting now that please approve this case as a change of status case. You can try that. Okay? That should answer your question. Next question is just a question. Attorney's fees for H-1. Well, let me tell you this, sir. The situation you've described, that your employer is taking money out of your salary for attorney's fees and deducting filing fees, etc. Well, first of all, they cannot make any deductions to your salary without your consent, okay? And unless it's for your convenience. It's a funny thing. Department of Labor looks down upon this practice. So let's say you've taken $1,000 corporate loan from the company, okay? Now, the company comes and says, okay, you know what? We are deducting $1,000 from your salary. They can't do that. That's illegal. Let's say your salary for the month is $5,000. They have to give you $5,000, and then you can write them a check for $1,000. Your salary in your hand must be complete. They can't deduct from it unless you ask, and it's being done for your convenience. Okay, number one problem. Number two problem, they can never deduct anything, attorney's fees, filing fees, about H-1. They cannot deduct that. That's illegal. They cannot even charge you for it. They can't ask you to repay it. That's illegal. The Department of Labor does not like cases like these. If you file a complaint, they will get into trouble. It's not legal. H-4, I think they could, although I'm not quite sure. There's some arguments to be made on both sides. But H-4, they are relatively in a much safer place. They could ask you for money back. No deduction. They could ask you for money back on H-4. But again, like I told you, they can't deduct it from your salary. Okay, is this legal? I already answered your question. Are there any issues with my status or green card process? No, I don't think so. Company is also deducting filing and attorney fee. Yeah, that's fine. So you've got your answers, I think. Next question is JBS, abandonment of green card. My wife has a green card. I'm a U.S. citizen. See, the wife is going to be outside USA for more than 365 days, which is 370 days. Now, that's a problem because that's an automatic abandonment of your green card. In fact, as far as I know, an airline will not even issue you a ticket if you've been out of the country for more than 365 days. So she won't even be able to board a plane. You will have to apply for a returning resident permit, which is SP1 visa, what you refer to, and it becomes complicated. It can take several months to get that. I would suggest if you get back into USA before 365 days. Okay. Can she come on a visa waiver program? She should be able to. If she surrenders her green card, she can try to come in on a visa waiver. She should be able to. If we decide to apply for an SP1, how difficult is it to get the approval? It's very difficult because you have to explain pretty much every day why you were outside USA. Okay? And it generally can take, as far as I know, last one we saw happen took about 6 months to process. Okay? Next question, People PC. H-1 entry and related questions. My brother and his family coming to USA on H-1 visa. He got his H-1 stamp last year. He's coming to US after 1 year of stamping. Well, that's the problem. Because it puts into doubt whether there really is a job out there for him. So if an employer has offered him a job and they can live without him for 1 year, INS could very easily question, is there really a job here? Or are you making it up? You see? That's the big problem. How to answer that question? Well, what you should do is you should have some kind of an explanation from the employer in writing, in the form of a letter, as to how they were able to do without his services for 1 year when they've applied for an H-1 for him. Okay? So make sure that they have some kind of documentation. Also, if the employer needs to be contacted by the CBP, the employer should be on the standby. They should be told that you may get a call from the government when I land at the airport. Another question, I have twin daughters born in USA. One of the babies is in India. She's coming back with his brother. I don't think there should be a problem. She's got an Indian, a U.S. passport. I don't see why you need anything else. As far as I know, it's not needed. But what you can do is, if you are a little concerned about it, you can call CBP. You can call CBP. Okay, CBP is usually pretty good about answering questions. I'm surprised how good they are about giving information over the phone. So call cbp.gov, CBP, Customs and Border Protection. Okay? Call them up, explain to them the situation, see if they want any specific kind of documentation. I don't think there should be anything. Next question, KRMNID. Admitted to one of the top 10 MBA programs in USA, I-140 has been approved. Now, problem is, how do I convert to F-1? From H-1 to F-1. Yeah, once your I-140 has been filed, it becomes a lot more difficult to get an F-1 status. However, I was told a couple of years ago, and you've already listened to the conference call we had on this issue. That's good, because we have almost 2-3 hours of conference call on this issue from May of last year or the year before last. The law is the same. During that time, a lot of people actually got an F-1 visa stamping from Ottawa, Canada, even though their I-140 was approved, and some of them even 485 was pending. So Ottawa was a lot more easy going about these cases up until last year or so. I don't know how they feel today. USCIS is probably not going to give it to you, but you can try. That's pretty much all your questions, Mani. Next question. Delivering the baby while on AOS and coming back with the child to the U.S. I am on advanced parole and EAD for the last 3 years. Okay, due to deliver a baby. I want to do that in my home in India. But the problem is, the baby will only be able to come on something like a tourist visa or something like that. That will get a lot more complicated for you. Okay, now unless your husband can go on to H-1, and then the child can go on come on H-4, and you can come on advanced parole, or you can also get an H-4. The only other option for the baby would be a tourist visa. So you'll have to take her in, get a tourist visa, bring her in, and if the priority date is current, put her on your 485 as well. Okay? So how can I get a visa for the baby? The answer is a B visa. Better thing is H-4. I hope that answers your question, Parvati. Next question, Kalyan KT. My wife entered USA on H-4, currently working on H-1B since October 2007. H-1B will expire September 30th, 2010. Her husband Her employer is planning to apply for H-1B extension this year, 2010. She doesn't have H-1B visa stamping in her passport. Okay. I think you had a couple of questions. Question one, assuming the new H-1B validity is from October 1st, 2010 to September 30th, 2013, would she get visa stamping only for the remaining validity period for her current H-1B ending September 30th, 2010? Yes. If she goes for a visa stamping now, even though she has an extension in hand that takes her to 2013, they're probably going to give her an H-1 visa only till September 2010. If she went to the consulate during the tenure of her 3 years extension, okay, in your case, October 1st, 2010 onwards, then she should be able to get an H-1 visa for 3 years. Okay, if she went now, because the new H-1 has not yet started, they'll probably give her H-1 visa only for a few months till September. If she goes after the H-1 kicks in or very close to it, I would say you can check with the consulate what their rule on this is. You can send them an email. But in my view, they would not be able to give her a visa stamping. Now, more importantly, your question was this. If my wife's status is ending in September, can we ask for an H-1 visa extension to begin even earlier than the current visa is expiring? As far as I know, yes, you can. So you could have the next H-1 start from August 2010 through July 2013, something like that. I don't know of any law that says you can't do that. Okay? Next question. What are the implications of getting married in India after applying N-400 and before actually becoming a citizen? Once you applied N-400, even if you get married, I don't see any implications. You may want to, when you go for your interview, correct the N-400 to reflect that you are now married. But even that's not mandatory, Ravi. I think you'll be fine. Your getting married in the middle of the naturalization should have no impact on either your citizenship or on her green card application. Okay? Next question, Farzi KK. Changing from B2 to J1. Now, in this case, there is a big difference. He wants to convert from B2 to J1. But when he entered USA, he told them he wants to convert to a J1 after getting his residency. So, Doc, I don't see any problem here. I think you can change your J1 from B2. Okay? The more tricky problem is start date on DS 2019 will be July 1st, which is 2 months ahead of expiry. So what you should do is you should first apply for a B visa extension or a stay extension. Okay? And let them know what you're doing, that you intend to apply for J1, change of status to J1, and that when you entered USA, you had already declared your intention. Please give me 2 months extra so that I can cover the gap between my DS 2019 kick-in and the time my status expires. So you ask for a tourist visa extension only for 2 months, and simultaneously or a few days later, you can file a B2J conversion. Okay? Next question is Kapoor Sunit. I knew I was going to go pretty fast with these questions, because these were all short, brief questions today. So we'll have time for follow-up questions as well as new questions, I think. Okay, hello Rajiv, I would like to thank you. I'm an H-1B visa holder working as a contractor in New York through a vendor. Company is in Kentucky. I transferred my visa to them in 2009, fourth year of my H-1B, to get my visa stamping done. I cannot postpone. What can I expect? Well, you need to have access to the end client so they can provide you a detailed letter about what you do, what kind of work you do, for how long it is going to be available. I actually have a sample letter in an article I wrote for American Bar Association, American Law Institute. That article is available on our website. It contains a sample letter, what kind of letter end client should give. Now, of course, consulate can ask for a little different format, but it contains pretty much everything you need. That article is, if you go to my profile, like where it says About Us on immigration.com, go to About Us. Then under there should be an entry about articles written by Rajiv. There are a few that we have mentioned. Actually, I've written a lot more articles, but I just can't find them. I don't know where they are. But this one was relatively recent. I think I wrote it just last year. So pull out that article about, I think it's, the name of the article is Proving Existence of a Job for H-1B Purposes. And there's a sample letter at the end of the article. Maybe you can check with your client, end client, if they can give you that letter. Okay, so can you enter from New York, New Jersey? Yeah, they're fine right now. I don't see any problem with that. Okay. So Jan 8 memo, of course, they want to make sure that your end client is not the one who's controlling you, and it's your employer who's controlling you, the H-1 employer who's controlling you. There's a lot we can talk about, Sumit. There really is not a simple answer to your question. But having an end client letter and having your employer control you are the two most important things. Okay? I hope this helps. Next question is from Zozo 0000. My H-1 expires April 2010. I plan to work on EAD with the same employer part-time. Can I work part-time? Yes. If I want to go back to H-1 full-time, part-time, or full-time, can I do that? Yes, but not within USA. You'll have to go outside USA. Okay, you'll do your H-1, then go get a visa stamping. Because once you come on EAD, you are no longer in status. You are on authorized period of stay. You want to read more about this, go to my blog. There is a full article on what is the difference between authorized period of stay, status, etc. Okay? It's on my blog. My ETA 9089 labor cert approval has an expiration date of March 31st, 2008. My labor was applied and approved in Feb 2006. What does the expiration date mean? I'm not sure what that means, and I'm not sure where you're reading from. Normally, a labor cert is valid only for 180 days once it's approved. Under the current law, a perm-based labor certification, once approved, is good only for 180 days. 180. Okay? Maybe that's what you're referring to. From the date of approval, 180 days. If you don't make your, file your I-140, your labor cert will expire. Next question, H-1B job. I'm on H-1B, applied for perm in Jan 2009. It's an audit. Can I get H-1 extension? Sure. Even if the audit is under process, you can get H-1 extensions as long as your labor cert was filed more than a year ago. And it was, because your labor cert was filed in Jan 2009. It is now March 2009. You are entitled to H-1 extension. Is it better to apply new labor with new employer? Why? I don't know what the grounds for audit are. I have no idea. So it's very difficult for me to comment whether the audit will be cleared or not. We are pretty much getting all audits approved. I mean, we found a couple of errors in our filings, which we are correcting now. But, you know, four cases out of, you know, more than thousands of cases that we have filed, we have found small errors. And, well, of course, they're not small errors. They're a big problem for our clients. But we are very vigilant. We make sure our filings are correct. Yeah, despite three or four reviews by everybody, sometimes errors creep in. So unless there is an error and the audit is properly defended, every case that we are under audit, we have gotten approved. Okay. If there's a denial, we've gotten it approved on appeal. So ultimately, audits by themselves are not a problem if they're handled correctly. If there's an error, like I said, in some of our cases, three, four of our cases, we made errors. But as soon as we found the error, we are immediately moving in to correct them as best as we can. So unless there is an error, the perm is defended properly, audit is defended properly, I don't think you should have a problem getting approval. Next question, Bhati. Namaskar ji. My 6 years on H-1B visa will be over on September 30th, 2010. Previous company applied for perm September 2nd, 2009. It's pending. So she wants to know, or Bhati or he wants to know, that can he or she get their H-1 approval with a new employer based upon a labor cert filed to an old employer which is still pending? Yes, you can. The law is very clear about that. Can I get an L-1 visa once my 6 years of H-1 is over? No, you can't get an H-1, an L-1 once your 6 years of H-1 are over. L-1A is for 7 years, H-1 is for 6 years, but you can't do it like that. There is a regulation there. It's under section 8 CFR 214. There's a regulation there that talks about how early you must apply change from H-1 to L-1 if you want to recapture the last 1 year of L-1 that you get, the seventh year of L-1. You can't do it after the H-1 is over. Okay? Then Monica forwarded an email to me at the last moment from Rahul. Rahul said, my name is Rahul, I-485 approved 2007, I-140 approved priority date December 2006, category DB3. My wife and I have EAD. Worked with current company who filed my VC for 10 years as a system analyst, but is not doing so well. I would like to move out. I know that AC21 needs to be filed. Oh, his question is salary. That salaries are now reduced, so it's very difficult for me to get. I had reached almost 85,000, but now offers are around 58,000. But first of all, it is not what you were making. It is what was the salary put on the labor cert that's important. So first thing you need to understand is we have to compare your salary with the labor certification salary, not what you were actually making. Number two, sometimes the area can be different. For example, if you filed your labor cert in 2006 in New York, maybe the salary in New York was 80,000, but if you go to Little Rock, Arkansas, the salary there is 35,000, and that's normal. So it also depends upon which area you are going to work in. Okay, so it's very difficult, Rahul, for me to answer this question in the hypothetical, but there are variations that can be explained and tolerated by USCIS. And economy can be one of the explanations. You know, we can't help it. It's not possible to get a job at this salary anymore. So that answers all my questions for the day. That's not bad. We finished in about half hour. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open the call for questions, and I would want people who have posted their questions first to talk to me. If you have any follow-up questions on the postings you have made, that will be the first set of questions. So, just one second. Please press *6 on your phone to talk with me. *6. Only those people who have posted their questions first.
Hi, Rajiv. This is N. Rajesh. This is my third posting is the third one.
Okay.
I'm currently out of the country on N-470.
Right.
Okay. Absolutely. And you said I won't be able to apply for N-400 until I return back to the States, correct?
Right. As far as I know, Rajesh Saab, that's the way it works.
Okay. Here's the situation, right? My wife will also be returning, back sometime in April-May time frame, and she would start working over there, or she might not work over there, but she's planning to stay there for good.
Then
right.
She can start her citizenship when she comes.
But I won't be able to start my citizenship. So she can start on her own, and I can't piggyback on her, saying at least my family is here.
No. I believe, and again, I could be wrong. See, the laws can be so complex. I haven't looked at this issue in detail. But in my view, that's the way to handle it. You know what I would do if I were you? There are a couple of things I would do. When your wife comes in and establishes domicile in USA, which means gets herself an apartment, she should call the local congressman's office. Okay? Go to congress.gov, enter your zip code, find out who your congressman is. House of Representatives member or senator. One of the two. Call them up and say, look, I live in your area. I have two questions about citizenship. Question number one, I just entered USA 30 days ago. I want to apply for naturalization. I don't have 90 days of domicile yet. Can I still apply for my naturalization? The answer is probably yes, because USCIS has always held that for this particular purpose, normally they want you to be completely qualified before you file the application. But for this purpose, they say it's okay because it takes us 6 months to even get to the naturalization. The 90 days requirement of domicile will waive because you already waited 6 months.
Okay.
So first thing she wants to find out is, can I file without establishing domicile for 90 days?
Okay. Because there was some posting I read.
I'm not done yet. Let me finish, please.
Okay.
Second question she needs to ask is, my husband is still in India, but he's coming shortly. The fact that he intends to move here is proven by my domicile here. Okay? Is it okay for him to apply for N-400 and leave again? Let the congressman get these answers from USCIS.
Okay.
Okay? Worst case scenario, if they say, well, you shouldn't have filed the application, big deal, you apply again later when you're here.
Okay, it won't be denied or it won't be rejected.
Even if it is rejected, you can refile the application. No big deal.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
The other question is, I read some article wherein it said people who are going out on N-470 and coming back would automatically be eligible. They don't need to have the domicile and the 3 month stay because, I mean, for my case, right, I've been in New Jersey for the entire last 10 years,
you
except
know,
this particular...
I don't know the answer to that question.
People
on N-470 need to establish domicile? As far as I know, they do need to establish domicile. But I could be wrong. There are so many variations in law. Every day I learn something new. I can tell you, generically speaking, my gut instinct is that you still have to establish domicile. Okay?
Okay.
I'm trying to think back, and the only way we were able to get around that 90-day issue was because of INS's policy that you don't have to have domicile if you're going to have to wait for citizenship anyway.
Okay. Okay. And the other question was, I want to file through your firm for the citizenship, either for myself or my wife, who is eligible.
Wait.
But how would I know if whether...
If you have a lot of money, we'll take your money. But let me suggest this to you. And this is what I tell all naturalization candidates. Unless there is a complication in your case, which I don't see, frankly, unless there is a complication, there is no need to hire a lawyer. If you do get into trouble, they send you a request for evidence and they give you 6 weeks, 8 weeks to respond. You can contact me then.
Okay.
File your application. It's a two-page form. I would be happy to take your money, but, you know, we're not creating any value for you.
Okay.
Okay. So that's
just a sense of comfort that anything goes wrong.
We certainly can do it better than you, but the issue is this. You can always get me if something goes wrong.
Okay.
There is no
problem. And at any point, it's not a point of no return that something bad is going to happen and I'll have to forego my green card or anything.
No, sir. As long as you've been coming in every few months, you should be fine.
Thank you so much.
Anytime. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Ravi. My posting is number 15.
Yes, Ravi.
And thanks for answering your question. So I guess you're saying that no implications if I'm getting married in the middle of naturalization.
Absolutely.
Right.
Congratulations. Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And if I do happen to, if I'm in India for the date of the interview, if I ask for the interview to be postponed, is there any implications
in
terms of...
No. No problem. It's the loss of time. That's the only implication.
Right. Is there any, how long... Can I choose the interview?
You can't choose the date, but what they will do is they will schedule you for the next appointment date that they have.
Is there any way to find out from your forums I don't know if it's going to be 1 week after or it's going to be 3 months after.
Easiest thing is congressman's office. They love people who are becoming citizens because you are their vote. Please call them. They'll oblige you like you are their own son-in-law.
So what do I ask them?
Just tell them I'm trying to
figure
out. Exactly what you told me.
Right.
What you told me. So just call them. Say, Sasurji, I have a problem.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yes, sir. One by one, please.
Hi, Rajiv. Good afternoon. This is H-1B job.
H-1B job. Let me get the posting. Give me 1 second. You were underscore job, right? Go ahead. I got your email.
My neighbor went for an audit, and for some reason, if the audit got rejected, can we file for an appeal and get the H-1B extension based on that?
If the audit is denied and you appeal to BALCA, Board of Alien Labor Certification Appeals, you can still get extensions while the appeal is pending. No question about it.
Okay. So this is what I heard from my employer, appeal whenever there is an audit rejected, go for an appeal, get the H-1B extension based on that, and then file for a new labor. Is that possible?
As far as getting an H-1 extension is concerned, that is correct.
Okay.
New labor, under the law, the employer cannot file for the same job, for the same employee in the same location while an appeal is pending. So they would either have to withdraw the appeal and then refile your case, or file your case for another job with the same company. Okay.
File different job, sorry.
Let's say your labor cert was filed as a programmer analyst.
Okay.
It was filed from the corporate headquarters in New York.
Okay.
They cannot file, the company cannot file for programmer analyst from New York for you again if the appeal is pending. But they can file for you as a software engineer or as a project leader or as vice president, whatever else.
Okay.
Okay.
But there won't be any, I cannot take my priority date or anything because it got rejected for the first time.
Your priority date will never be yours until I-140 is approved.
Okay. Okay, but at least H-1 extension can be done based on
you
the
will,
appeal?
Yes, you will keep getting H-1 extensions as well as the bulk RP is pending.
Okay, while audit is under progress.
Yes, sir. After audit, yeah. If there's a denial and there's an appeal pending, you will still keep getting extensions. Audit, to no question. Your waivers are still pending.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome. Next person, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Rahul.
Hi, Rahul. Bolo.
You answered my last question. You almost answered it. The only one
the
thing.
Salary question, right? You had sent the email to Monica, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. The salary issue is very simple, like I told you. It depends. First of all, you have to look at the green card, the labor cert salary. You know, that's the most important thing.
Right. So the labor cert salary, I mean, you cannot differ too much from that salary. Is that correct?
Well, again, you see, there are variables that can explain the difference. If the salary was computed for New York and you're going to work in Little Rock, Arkansas, salary is going to be different. You know?
Right.
If for example, the difference between Iowa and, San Francisco is going to be fairly big.
What about in the same state?
If it's in the same state, again, state is not relevant. It is the area of employment that's relevant. Within Iowa, Des Moines, Iowa, and Foxhound, Iowa could be two different stories, totally different salaries. One is backwater village, and the other one is a metro area.
So it's not the state
that is the problem. It is the particular city, whether it's a developed city, underdeveloped city, metro area, whatever it is.
Right. And one more thing, it was in the question was I had initially got a job as a system analyst, but it's difficult to find that kind of, and my actual background was accounting because I have a degree in master's in commerce.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm finding a little bit more comfortable with those kind of offers that I'm getting. So do you think that would be a problem or it can be worked out?
Yeah, AC21, it will be a big problem unless the jobs are same or similar.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that will be a big change. So, so that will be a problem then.
Yes.
Right,
you could also keep one more option in mind. If push comes to shove, you can even start a new green card process and transfer the priority date.
Okay. So, I'll be still, my priority date is 2006, so my priority date will be again pushed further down.
No, priority date will always remain 2006, even with the new green card.
Oh, even it's a new zone. Okay.
That's the whole point. Once your I-140 is approved, the priority date becomes your property to keep forever, unless the I-140 is revoked. That's very rare.
So the new green card should be based on the different position which I'm looking for, maybe accounting or something like that.
It can be, but it's going to get tricky. You may want to talk to your lawyers about this. It's going to get tricky, but that's an option you need to keep in the back of your mind to discuss with your lawyers.
Okay. All right. That's all I want to know. Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Rahul. Next question.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Rajiv. Thank you for taking my question. I'm the person doing H-1 to F-1 with I-140 approved.
Yes, of course.
Money. My question is, what would you suggest, a COS or an F-1 in Ottawa?
Ottawa.
First question.
Ottawa. Actually, many years ago, in 1986, I got my own F-1 stamping in Ottawa. I was a student in Canada. I was doing a postgraduate diploma in Canada, law diploma, and my green card was pending when I came to U.S. And the lady asked me, the consular officer asked me, she says, how can I give you a student visa when your green card is pending? I said, sure, you can. If you trust that I will not violate the terms of my student visa, you can give it to me. There's no law that says you cannot. It's merely a cautionary pointer to the consular officers that you should not normally give student visa when a green card is pending. So she gave me my student visa.
I have a follow-up question. Suppose, I'm really scared of leaving my job and going out to the country. So suppose I go for a COS, it gets rejected, and then I decide to go to Ottawa for F-1. Does it make my case even harder? Or is it better to just, case one, COS rejected, then going to Ottawa, case two, straight away going to Ottawa?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
As far as the consulate is concerned, they don't care if your change of status was denied.
Okay.
But when you re-enter USA, I don't know what CBP sees on their screen.
Mm-hmm.
If CBP sees that your change of status was denied and now you got an F-1 visa stamping, they could deny you entry.
Okay. One more question. What if I go for COS? It's just pending, and my classes start in August. Till August, I get no reply from them. Can I then just go to Ottawa and get an F1?
So your question is, if the COS is pending, can I leave and get my visa stamping? Yes.
Yes.
But if you leave USA while the COS is pending, the COS is deemed to be abandoned.
Okay, that's abandoned then.
Yeah, that's not a problem anyway. So.
Okay, one more question. If I go to Ottawa and my F1 is rejected, what are my options then, and would you be able to help me?
No, I would not be able to do much for a student visa rejection because that's a matter of discussion with the counselor. Okay? But you could, if you're not leaving your job and if you still have an H1, you could come back on H1.
But what about F1? Suppose it is rejected, what are my options? Can I do anything, try to get the F1 again?
Not really. By the way, you should also look into one more option. And I know that you've listened to our conference call recordings on this F1 issue before. I remember I discussed in those conference call issues that you could always go to school on H1. So if you're working part-time and going to school on H1.
I thought about those options and they don't seem to... I'm not in a position to...
Something to keep in the back of your mind. Maybe
I know. One more final question. Would you be in any manner able to help me? I mean, can you do anything for me? Hiring you help me?
No.
Not at all?
No. It'll help you only in that it'll make your pocket lighter, but it's not going to happen.
Just preparing the F1 case, even if I want to go to Ottawa, and I mean, can you not help me increase my chances?
Maniji, I would love to be able to tell you that I am a magician, that I can wave a magic wand and make the consulate give you a visa. I don't think I can.
Okay. One more point. Sorry, I'm taking too much time. Suppose I go to Ottawa, my F1 gets rejected. I mean, there is nothing I can do to try to get an F1. The only thing I can do is get an H1.
You can get an H1. Yes, ma'am. You have to move along. I've got a bunch of people waiting. You can wait till the end of the conference, and if you have more questions, I'll be happy to talk with you then. Okay? Hang tight.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else? Okay, anybody has any questions, go ahead.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yes, hello.
Hi, I have a question regarding my H1B. I did my transfer to a new company and working on that transfer as portability since 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it's in background check status since 4 months. And I wanted to travel back India, but the problem is I believe if I leave, I won't be able to come back because I don't have
a problem. It becomes very problematic, yes, sir.
Yeah, so could you suggest, I followed up with the local senator and they have followed up with USCIS.
But they're saying it's a background check.
Right, it's a background check which they don't have much control. They will be...
Do you have a Muslim name?
Sorry, what's that?
Do you have a Muslim name?
No.
Okay. I think the congressman, you should keep following up with them almost on a monthly basis.
Oh, you mean with the senator office?
Yes, it could be the company that's being investigated.
Okay. So in those cases, one of the other thing, what I'm thinking is making another transfer to a new company?
Yes.
So in that case, can I still be here and go to the, because
you
I'm
can,
working in a layered structure
you
right
can,
now.
You can try, but chances are you will be asked to go get a visa stamp.
So is that mandatory? Is that something depends on USCIS to tell
me? It's almost always going to happen. When your previous case is pending and your I-94 has expired, they'll almost always...
But my I-94... My I-94...
Yeah, if it has not expired, you could do it within USA, no problem.
Oh, it's not expired. Okay, then I can just make a transfer to them and I can start working for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and one more final question is, I also have my labor approved with the employer with whom my background check is pending. My H1 is H1 transfer is pending.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there any once the 140 is approved and if I'm leaving the employer, is there anything that I need to establish so as to keep that active, or do I need to have anything with the employer so that my I-140 is active with them, even if I'm with some other employer?
You see, the I-140 remaining active depends only on two things.
Mm-hmm.
The employer's good faith intention to hire you back.
Right.
And your good faith intention to get hired back.
Right.
INS has even gone so far as to say,
mm-hmm.
we will only look at the intention on the date the I-140 was filed.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so let's say you file your I-140 today, a week later you leave this employer, we are okay.
Right. Oh, okay, okay. But as long as we are ready to or intending to come back and join the employer,
yeah, the green card can go on.
Oh, okay, okay. Yep, thanks a lot.
Good luck to you.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Hassan. How are you?
Good, Hassan. How are you?
Good, good. Rajiv, I have my labor and 140 approved. And, you know, priority date is 2006, January.
Okay.
And my H-1 is getting expired. I'm just wondering and scared about, you know, this RFEs, you know, and also this new memorandum January. So can I able to, like, work on state of EAD? Or
yeah, you can. I don't see any problem. A lot of
like
people look
Okay, in case if I file my H-1, and by some reason is denied or some RFP
card. Just go to EAD. Yeah, that's what I would do too.
Okay, even means like even if H-1 denies, then it's still I can able to work on EAD, right? And
yes, sir.
And
yes.
Further also, if I apply for EAD, then shouldn't be any query? Like
I don't think so. So far, I haven't heard of any such problem.
Okay, okay. So what do you suggest, like better to file the H-1?
Yeah, I would try the H-1 if you have access to the end client. Try the H-1.
Uh-huh.
If that doesn't work, just go to EAD.
Okay, but EAD is not, like, in case for further, if I apply for the EAD, it doesn't matter, like, they will look for the H-1.
I don't think so. I already answered that question. I don't think it should be a problem. But, again,
okay.
I'm not God. I'm just a human being making a guess.
Okay. All right, Rajiv, thank you very much for that.
Good luck. Good luck. Next question, guys. Very nice. No more questions. Almost done. And 8 minutes to spare.
Yeah, hi, Pati.
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. This is Pati here. Sorry, I joined late. I hope you already answered my question.
I did answer your question. You said, is it possible to extend H-1B based upon prior perm? The answer is yes. Can I get an L-1A visa if 6 years are over? The answer is no. But
okay.
Listen to the rest of the conference. All your questions are answered already.
Okay, thanks, Ajit. So what is the possibility that after 6 years, can I get like 1 year extension in
visa? You can get H-1 extension based upon previous company's file, as long as it is pending.
As long as it is pending and it is not expired after.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And in the meantime, the second employer would have filed 365 days, so it's fine.
So that means that if I get my extension till, let's say, January 2011, or maybe, so, I'm sorry, September 2011. So within September 2011, if my employer files it, so will I be fine?
I think so, because that means you would then be able to get extension based upon the second employer's filing, as long as it is done within the first 6 years of your H-1.
But my 6 years.
See, if it is done after first 6 years of H-1, we don't know the law for sure. I think it should still be fine, but the law is not as clear.
Okay, because it should be fine. You are saying because sorry, there is a lot of background noise.
That's okay.
Sorry, I'm kind of a little bit nervous here.
No, that's all right. Don't be nervous. Let me explain to you one more time. I understand what your question is. My answer is this: if your second employer files your perm application within the first 6 years of your H-1, there is no doubt that can become the basis of further H-1 extension. However, if they file your perm in the 7th year or the 8th year of your H-1, it is more doubtful because there is no clear law on that. I still think it will be fine. I still think it will not be a problem. But there is no clear law.
Oh, I see, Rajiv. So my 6 years will be completed on September 30, 2010. So I have to push my employer to file.
Tell them to file before September. That way we are clear.
Okay, great. And what if I get my, what if my perm gets approved? Because my perm was approved, my previous perm was filed with my previous company in September 2009.
You should
so
still
what
be able to get your H-1 extension because the perm is valid for 180 days.
Okay, so that means that let's say, Rajiv, I get my extension through January 2011, and if I apply my current perm before September 2010, that means after January 2011, I can get my extensions, right? That's what you're saying?
You should be able to get your extension by September 2011 because by that time, this application will become right.
Okay, great. Because, you know, I talked with my Rajiv, one last question, Rajiv, please. I spoke with my paralegal from immigration team. What he is saying is,
get a lawyer on the phone. Paralegals have their limited knowledge of law. Get talk to the lawyer. They should
because,
be giving
legal
advice anyway.
Yeah, because the problem is I don't have too much access to those people, and finally with lot of difficulty I got the access to her. And what she's saying is, we cannot extend based on your previous perm, because your previous perm has not been pending for a year. It should at least be pending for a year, otherwise we cannot file. When I was transferring to this company, I requested them to file for my H-1B transfer along with the extension. They said that no, we cannot do an extension based on your previous perm, because it has not been pending for...
These guys don't know what they are doing. Talk to either their lawyers or get some competent lawyers involved. This is the law. Let's say my perm will be pending in June 2010, 1 year.
Okay.
Let's say I filed in June 2009. I can actually apply for my H-1 extension in January, 6 months ahead of time, as long as I ask for extension beginning from the date my perm will be pending 1 year. So in January, I can apply for extension to begin from June. In January, the perm has not been pending 1 year. Perm has been pending only 6 months.
Oh, I see what you mean.
But in January, I can apply it proactively 6 months ahead of time, because the date from which I'm starting my second H-1 or H-1 extension, that on that date, perm would have been pending 1 year.
Okay, got it, Rajiv.
Okay? If you haven't got it, play what I have just said to the paralegal and tell them, in most states it is a crime to perform legal consultations and legal advice without a license. So if they don't have a license to practice law, they shouldn't be advising about law to people. They should get their lawyers involved.
Okay, thank you, Rajiv. Thanks a lot. But finally, I cannot get the L1A extension after September 2000.
No, sir. You should listen to the contract. I don't want to repeat my answers. Okay?
Okay, thanks. Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot. And just in case, if I want to know more options, I want to take your...
Be happy to charge you for it, sir, or join me again in the next conference.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot, Rajiv.
Good luck.
Okay. It gives me a little hope. Thank you. Bye.
Oh, you'll be fine. Next question,
thanks.
Folks.
Hi Rajiv, I have one more question. My 140N labor has approved in 2005 priority date, but I'm planning to file for EB2 category. So if something has happened on the EB2 category, a new green card filing, is there any effect on my previous green card?
It can, because I'm concerned whenever people try to do an EB3 to EB2 conversion with the same employer, I always want to make sure that number one, they don't start the new job before the second I-140 is approved, and number two, they have an explanation why they have two green cards going from the same employer.
Okay.
Just two things you got to worry about.
The reason for that, I'm planning to port the date, so because my green card was filed on EB3.
No, don't tell me. Just discuss it with your lawyers and see if they have a good explanation.
Okay. Okay. All right, Rajiv. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Anybody else, folks?
Hi, Rajiv. This is Kalyan again. I had that background question. I have one more question when I was thinking the answers that you gave.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, suppose if I got to go back again to India, considering if I'm doing another transfer to a new company,
sure.
And if they ask me to go back, do I need to, because I won't be having any pay stubs or any such, so would it be treated like a new H-1 in that case?
It doesn't really matter. You're not subject to the quota anyway.
There won't be any need for pay stubs submission or anything, right?
I don't see any problem.
Oh, okay. And one more question is, as I said, I had my previous employer on H-1. That is valid until 2011 June. And I have the I-94 on I-797.
Mm-hmm.
That's valid.
Are you still working for them?
No, but I'm with a new transfer.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. If you were still working with them, you would still be in status, then you could do a transfer directly to
Right. But you said if I-94 is active, that should be okay. But
no, I-94 active,
even
that's
if I work for them.
That's just one part of it. Second part is you're still working for that employer.
Oh, okay. I get it now. Okay. So it's still as good as waiting for this, the current process to go through until I can't use that I-94 if I leave the country, right?
Yes.
Okay, thanks again.
Good luck to you.
Bye.
Anybody else? Mani, you had a question?
Yes, Rajiv. Thank you.
I wanted to know, in that conference call you held last year, there were many people who were in the same situation.
Everybody got their visa approval from Ottawa.
They all went to Ottawa? I mean,
eight people from that conference call went to Ottawa.
Oh,
eight
okay.
people. All of them got it. I don't know about today, but 2 years ago, that's how it was.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
If I have any questions, I'll either email you.
No, you can just log into the conference. We'll be happy to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, I've got to run. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.